that what research was used to decide that the Keystone XL pipeline would have no significant environmental impact. There is a protest tonight, and I'm sure that KBOO will have all that information for you. The phone number is 503-705-1943 for more information. Back to the headlines. This weekend, Punxsutawney Phil wasn't the only one who saw his shadow. Members of Service Employee International Union Local 503 rejected their leadership's effort to rewrite the local's bylaws and merge with another SEIU local. And thanks, Maisie. Oregon's own prognosticating insectivore Maisie the hedgehog woke up on Saturday morning and more or less turned off the alarm and went back to sleep, pulling her shadow over herself. 6 more weeks of winter, Oregon, and that's not counting the week that it rains during the Rose Festival. Wednesday deadline looms, and new teachers' contract is still in play, recent Monday nights have been anything but light. Parents and students stand for the most part in solidarity with the city school district union, Portland Association of Teachers. Gwen Sullivan heads up that organization. She has told me that she would like to join us on Air Cascadia. She is in negotiations all day, every day at this point. And it's, of course, as always, it's the parents and the students that know the true value of teachers, trying to sell them short, while at the same time we have massive amounts of money spent on college sports, athletics. We witness the locker rooms at the certain professional sports teams whose names we shan't mention. But nonetheless, there is money there. It is just not flowing in the right direction. And when it's GMOs on the table, Governor Kit Talbot seems to have lost his appetite. On the menu so far, there's a tentative list of task force members and co-conveners as part of the governor's decision to form yet another committee to study the situation. There's going to be a meeting, first meeting this month. The governor's natural resources director, as advisor, has mentioned, that's Richard Whitman, the task force is supposed to address both the conflict between genetically engineered and non-genetically engineered growers and consumer choice and labeling information, leaving out, of course, the fact that our trading partners in Europe and Asia, as we've said before, have no interest in buying things that contain strange DNA that we have no idea as yet what the downstream effects are going to be. We have really no definitive analysis of the health dangers. We have not had enough time. This is not something which can be studied in 2, 3, 4, even 5 years. This is a multi-generational. It's DNA. This is generational. We will have no way of knowing until we're several generations out what the effects of this stuff is going to be. It seems that the governor has not taken that part into account. As always, he is his eyes are focused on the mighty bottom line. Consumer choice, right? How it's sold. Labeling, again, how it's sold. And the dust up between the GMO growers and non-GMO growers. Non-GMO growers, in many senses, have no choice in the matter because, again, the governor completely forgetting that life is interconnected in ways that are so complex that our most elaborate algorithms are unable to provide us with an accurate picture of where these substances end up. We don't even know, minus the GMO variable, how complex nature is. So we're wading into some pretty dark waters, and the main problems with GMOs are exactly what the governor's task force is not looking at. In a recent interview. NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden brought the German television channel NDR up to date on the state of worldwide surveillance by governments of Britain and the United States on German television. Americans, of course, were too busy watching the Super Bowl. Daniel Hunter, Waging Nonviolence, tells you how you can hack and whistleblow your way to the truth with little more than a pencil. And we're going to run through a few steps how he does it. And more on the NATO 3 trial. The state of Illinois' domestic terrorism statute, just one example of scores of state-level terrorism laws passed after 9/11. We constantly forget that we live under the shadow of the USA Patriot Act. People have come of age. This thing still is in force. It is still undermining, decimating our civil liberties, our freedoms, all of our rights, little by little. It has been gnawing away at it. It's like one of those flesh-eating bacteria, only this is a soul-destroying one. In any case, in the aftermath of 9/11, this particular statute may fail its first challenge if Illinois is in Illinois, if the details of the way the government handled this case are revealed to light. They're finally actually going on trial. This is the trial, of course, of Brian Church, Brent Beddeley, and Jared Chase. The picture that continues to emerge falls short of the state's alleged terrorism charges. There's really no foundation. And again, there was an informant involved. It's important to be aware that when people enter an organization, you know very little about them. They have a charismatic personality. People abandon common sense and turn to follow those individuals. This is what can happen. This is what happened to the NATO 3. And moving right along, finally, in Utah, the air is anything but mountain fresh and clean. In fact, the air pollution crisis there has been so severe that it drew a crowd of approximately 5,000 motivated, outraged citizens to the state capitol the last week of January. And what was now on the books is the largest air pollution demonstration ever. That's a first for the great state of Utah. Apparently people there are awake and they do notice what they're breathing. The U.S. hit, and internationally, the U.S. hit back at Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday after the Israeli Prime Minister warned that calls for boycotts of Israel to pressure it over settlements in the occupied territories are immoral and unjustified and would not achieve their goal. Benjamin Netanyahu said that he would not negotiate with a gun to his head, and of course, which conjures up images of many young Palestinians, and not so young, many Palestinians with guns to their heads, and not in a figurative sense. That's it for the headlines, and moving on to the weather for around Cascadia. Isolated showers today. We could get some sun. It sounds unlikely. We are due for some precipitation, not much in the way of winds, and lows tonight. It's going to be colder and coldest throughout the week. For tomorrow, overcast skies and gradually, they say, clearing. Highs only getting up to about 37, and overnight lows in the 20s for Tuesday night. Clear, lows around 19, east wind around 16 miles per hour, gusting up to 28. So for Tuesday night, lows around 19, winds gusting up to 28. That's wind chill added to the very low temperature, so brace yourself, cover up pipes, and do all those sort of things. We're going to forego our alternative forecast for today because so many things are happening. As I said before, the Keystone XL pipeline, it looks like that has been cleared. But has it really been clear? There are other agencies that are due to weigh in. There's pressure on President Obama in the aftermath of a lackluster State of the Union speech, which left a whole lot of questions that to be addressed. Obviously, the Keystone XL pipeline, if we were in fact now living under the iron fist of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that would clear it, absolutely. These are exactly the kinds of things that the Trans-Pacific Partnership was created and designed to promote, to cut through laws, to cut through local protests, to cut through local governments standing up. All of that would be steamrolled flat. And pipelines like the Keystone XL and many more, which are, no pun intended, in the pipeline right behind it, many more are waiting to go. So it's only a matter of time. And the only obstacle in the way is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's what's really holding this up. They're waiting for that to pass so they can railroad this thing through, and many more like it. Moving right along. In Japan, TEPCO. We have news from Japan. TEPCO fears that a 3-centimeter hole in Fukushima's reactor number 2 has essentially sprung a leak. The suppression pool at this reactor has sprung a hole through which a highly radioactive water is probably leaking out. The plant operator has said only that, nothing more. The information is based on data gathered by a robot sent into the suppression pool at the bottom of the reactor. And TEPCO, of course, estimates the damage area could be 8 to 9 centimeters. Things of this sort, as we all know, tend to get larger, not smaller. And that is exactly one of the things that we have to be concerned about when it comes to assessing Fukushima's long-term effects. This is not going to stop. There is a tremendous amount of hot waste there, and it's springing leaks. It's going to come out somehow. No real plans in place as yet for dealing with that. We are flat out of time. I'd like to give you more on Punxsutawney Phil and also our own Maisie the Hedgehog. There's a lot more to talk about. This, however, has been Air Cascadia for Monday, February 3rd, 2014. Kate Welch engineered the show today. Thanks, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. And don't forget, there's a demonstration tonight against the Keystone XL. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO's winter membership drive is right around the corner, starting on February 6th. And we need your help in raising $94,000. Can you show leadership by offering a matching gift of $500 or more? These generous matches have proven to be very successful in helping KBOO raise money. If you are interested, please call KBOO at 503-231-8032 extension 207 or email us at membership@kboo.org. Thanks, and I look forward to hearing from you soon.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University, dedicated to helping working adults revitalize their careers with 5 part-time MBAs, including an MBA in healthcare management. Evening, weekend, and online classes provide scheduling flexibility. March 6th, information session, merrillhurst.edu.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Last month, 4-methylcyclohexane methanol, a chemical used to process coal, spilled into the Elk River near Charleston, West Virginia. It turned out that little was known about the health hazards of the substance that contaminated the water supply for at least 300,000 people. In the wake of this disaster, we still don't know the full extent of what the long-term health impacts will be from the spill. This morning, we're going to talk with Deborah Davis, president and founder of Environmental Health Trust, about how the West Virginia emergency illustrates our inability to monitor and regulate pollution so that communities can be protected from toxic releases. Dr. Davis has authored a number of popular books, including When Smoke Ran Like Water. Deborah, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you very much for having me, Barbara.
And I think the last time we talked was back in 2002 when Smoke Ran Like Water came out.
Well, it's nice to talk to you again and like to do it more frequently.
Yes,
we have a lot of new things to discuss, including what's happened in West Virginia.
Well, let's start by talking about what's happened in West Virginia, and then we'll go back a little bit into your past life and why, what some of the events, the toxic release events that probably helped shape your career and your view of the world. But I've been following a number of environmental groups are talking about how we have what they're calling water sacrifice zones all across the country and probably throughout most of West Virginia. And it's a result of the fact that environmental regulations